From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 699, Getting Value from Unstructured Data with guest Seth Juarez. Recorded Friday, May 29th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Seth Juarez, who really needs no introduction. And it's not because I haven't pulled up his bio, because I would never do that. I'm not that guy. But Seth is, you know, you'd think he was the Channel 9 guy, because he has been the Channel 9 guy for a long time. But you're not anymore. You have a real job, don't you?
I sure do. I work in cloud advocacy, and I lead our efforts in AI and machine learning. And so I get to corral what we're doing as advocacy for people out there. So my job is to basically help everyone else be successful with our stuff. And the cool thing about my job is I don't report in through the product groups or marketing. And so we effectively get to be the ombudsman of what we put out. And so we get to go in there.
Yeah. So you're allowed to move around the teams to try and help people be successful?
Absolutely. We go in there and knock things around. And we're like, hey, we know, because in any large organization, you have people focused, hyper-focused on things, which is awesome.
Yeah,
but we are horizontally focused, not vertically.
It's very powerful. And yet I watched a lot of Build, and you were everywhere at Build. You sure you don't work for Channel 9?
You know, and that's the thing. It wasn't necessarily a Channel 9 production. If anybody knows about Channel 9, Golnaz is the studio owner there.
Big G.
She basically had a large hand in all of the work happened at Channel, because she's so good at this stuff. And she like usually is like, hey, Seth, come help us out. I'm like, I would love it. Because it's actually probably one of my favorite parts of working at Microsoft is doing those kind of events.
For sure. Yeah. And but you also have an education in mathematics. Like, you're not doing machine learning casually. You're serious about the math side of all of this.
Yeah. So most people don't know this, and I don't promote it. Like, I'm not like that guy, you know, that's
never.
How do you know someone went to Harvard? Oh, they'll tell you. Or CrossFit. It's the same. Like, they'll tell you either way. If it's CrossFit or Harvard, the same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
I'm not that guy, but I went to school. I did research in machine learning at the University of Utah, and I did NLP and machine translation under a professor called Hal Dalmay, who actually now does some work at MSR in New York, which is great because every once in a while I get to see him. But basically, I got my master's, and then as I was doing my PhD, Hal decided to go to the University of Maryland at College Park, which is a great thing, and he invited me to go with him. But, you know, I had kids, and I couldn't do that. And I was like, I should probably just get a job. But I did research there on the computational models for machine learning, and this was right before the dawn of – well, I say dawn, but re-dawn of deep learning again.
Right.
Because this happened several times.
So this is like 2011, 2013 time frame. That's sort of when all this deep learning stuff resurfaced again.
Yeah, I finished in 2008, 2009-ish around that time, and then deep learning came out. But I understand machine learning. I know how it works, and neural networks are just another way of creating functions that are based on data.
I love the way you describe that, because too many people are describing it as a variant of HAL, and that is simply not true.
Not at all. Like I was a .NET programmer for nigh a decade before I went back to school. And what I realized early on is the thing that people were calling machine learning models were just functions,
right,
serialized in a different way and created in an alternative manner. Because there's certain class of problems where you're like, you have to rack your brain over how am I going to write an algorithm for this? For example, looking at a picture and seeing a sheep, for example, or a cow. Like, imagine, like, as a programmer, imagine having to write the algorithm to do that. And as you think about it, you know that you're getting as input a square of numbers, because that's what a picture is.
Right.
But in each spot, you have three, maybe four numbers if there's an alpha channel, because it's RGBA. And imagine having to go through those numbers and write an algorithm with if statements and for loops and whatever and say, sheep, dog. I mean, that would be really stupid.
Yeah.
And that's not something you want to do. So instead, machine learning, what it does is it allows you to feed it pictures of things. You pick a function shape a priori, and then it optimizes its internal parameterization such that it guesses the right thing as best as it can.
Yes. which is far less sexy than I made a person out of a computer.
Exactly. And that's my personal pet peeve, and I will razz on this all day, all night, is I hate when we anthropomorphize AI, because mm-hmm. what it does is it does two things. Number one, it imbues it with more power than it has,
right.
Number one.
So we don't number question two, it enough.
Yeah, we don't question it. Number two, it allows people to disclaim liability.
Right.
Because, again, these models are only as good as the data you feed it. And if the data is unfair, for example, mm-hmm. then your model will be unfair. And people could say something like, well, the model decided it and it knows. No, your unfair data trained an unfair model.
Yes.
And that's what decided. And now you can't disclaim liability because your data sucks.
Yeah, because you did a bad job ultimately.
And
But by that same token, there is so much value inside of all this data that we're collecting within our organizations that I think we've done a bunch of different things to extract value from it, starting with reporting, arguably the least sexy of the things we could do with data.
And yet most important.
Most important, most valuable, and very linear, very clear. We know how to get value from that. You know, what's today's sales? What geographies did we buy from? Like all of those kinds of things. And then you get a little more sophisticated, right? We started getting into OLAP analysis and starting to mash data together in more sophisticated ways. And we started finding that's when real flaws started showing up in our data, I think, when suddenly the load and transform and sourcing mattered a lot.
And those cubes, man, they told us a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Some of it terribly, terribly wrong, but.
Especially the part where everyone started to realize this data is garbage.
Yeah.
Phil keeps putting name in the age field because this is COBOL and you can do that.
Yep.
This is a problem. And so people don't realize that again, if you think of an AI model as a function, what you give it as input to make decisions is going to dictate largely how it will behave out there.
Sure.
On its own.
But we are getting better and better tools to extract value from data.
Of course.
I guess the question is, like, what's the tactic now with the amount of data that we're gathering? Because it's clearly out of control. We've become pack rats. Like, every one of us is a hoarder. I'm doing shows where we're having this conversation of when should you delete data? Which generally the response from most people is, are you insane? We would never delete data, which is not correct. Like, and in some cases, not legal in some, you know, under certain government regulations and so forth. And as well as unwise. But most people, I feel like they're looking at their data and they can't make sense of it. They don't even know where to begin, especially with these modern tools.
And this is the funny bit, because at every organization, you are invariably going to find the quote unquote, and I'll air quote it so people can see it in their mind's eye with my fingers up, the corporate junk drawer, which we call lovingly the share. Just put it on the share, Phyllis.
Yeah,
Bill, where is the share?
Yeah, put it on
I don't know. I need to put it on the share too, Phyllis. Everyone has the share, and there is so much stuff in there that nobody even knows what's in there. And there's probably like some glorious master plan thing in there that you may never find as an organization that could have made you the multi-billion dollar enterprise that you should have been. But instead, you know, you're sitting at home trying to figure out.
And I'm fascinated you call it the share. It's not even the database.
It's the share.
Yeah.
Because this is like your Word docs and your PDFs and your images and your things that just put it on the share, like your Excel files, like that kind of stuff. Like
stick it in the junk drawer.
Yeah, the share, you know, to be more eloquent. But you know how much value is trapped in random Excel spreadsheets on the, quote, share right now?
Oh, my goodness.
There is so much valuable data. And the idea of actually making use of it seems quite daunting to some.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there is this thing that we have that so I talked about AI models earlier. Yeah. I want to stipulate also that there is a case where people want to just use AI models that people have made that are good mm-hmm. without having to put their own data. At Microsoft, we have those. They're called cognitive services. And there is a number of services that are very good at like pulling text out, looking at an image and telling you what's in it, all this good stuff. It's really cool stuff that you just call. What if there was a way to leverage a bunch of disparate services like that, while at the same time being able to ingest all of that unstructured data, add AI insights to it, and then be able to find and surface it?
That's cool.
That's what I made a talk. There was an Ignite tour that happened earlier pre-COVID where I ran around and gave a talk on this. And okay. It was like, they told me I had to. I'll be straight with you. They were like, no, Seth, make this talk. And I'm like, fine. And then when I made it, I realized, oh, wow, this is actually quite useful. You know, I usually live in the realm of making my own models.
Right.
But when I had to go and do this, I realized, oh, wow. It turns out it was the second most popular talk at all of the Ignite tours.
Wow.
The one above it being Azure Fundamentals, like 100 or something.
Right. Everybody getting grounded. But this idea of making sense of all of this data, getting value from all this data, that seems like a sort of 100 entry thing too. Like everybody needs to know this.
Yes.
You need to be able to get value out of this data.
And that's why it was the first talk in our machine learning track.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So before we get to any of the sexy stuff, it's like, yeah, let's go make sense of your data.
Yeah. And so if you think about it, like you have stuff in these files. Let me give you an example. And I'm going to tell you about a technology that probably seems like a complete non sequitur and has nothing to do with unstructured data and AI. But let's talk about Azure Search. And everyone's like, wait, what?
What?
How did we take that left turn into that neighborhood? So searching is when you Google with Bing, for example, mm-hmm. you're trying to find information from unstructured data.
Right.
Right?
Of course. That's exactly
That's what
right.
it is. And Azure Search is basically a service that does that for you, and you can pretend that you made it, basically. Like you can query it and return JSON documents, and there's an API and all that stuff. But what some clever engineer did is he or she said, what if during the ingest process of data, the indexing, that's the actual term.
Right.
When we index this data, what if we added hooks in that indexer such that we could add these things called skills to extract more data and add it into the search index.
Interesting. So the idea that when I'm searching through the share and I hit something like a spreadsheet, I then call a service that's particularly good at extracting data from spreadsheets.
Yes. Or anything. Because it turns out that if you can add any type of skill at the indexing point, because indexing takes a while.
Yes.
So you would just put, like, for example, let's just say y'all were smart and you moved your quote unquote share into blob storage in the cloud. That means that it's actually there and, you know, redundant and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually point Azure Search to it. And as it's indexing, it'll index forever.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it pulls a document. And as you inject a skill in there, it can pull some example. What if you have pictures of all of the receipts that everyone ever took,
nice.
You know, of sales invoices, and it's on the quote unquote share. That data is fairly worthless to you.
Yes.
In its current state.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But what if you pointed an indexer on it, it pulled it in, and you injected a skill to do, for example, OCR,
right.
intelligent OCR using neural network.
Now, it's not a picture. It's actually text.
It's the picture and text because right. that's how it stores it. Mm-hmm. And as you index it, when you go and search for, man, when did we buy that one thing? And you search it, it will pull up the picture of the thing
yeah.
and highlight where the text is. And it's using AI to do that, right?
Magic.
And that's not sexy.
Yeah.
But it's basically taking something unstructured and adding more structure by adding ASCII characters to describe what it is,
right. for example. And that ultimately is the thing that was the useful part of the search, is that you were now able, by having that skill to recognize that those were words in an image and OCR them, then able to match those words to take you to that receipt. Which
absolutely
for me as a human now, when I read that receipt, it's like, now I know what company we bought it from. I know who did the transaction. I know how we paid for it. Like a ton of information just came alight to me.
Not only that, but think of this. You search for it, you find it, and you say, yes, sir, Mr. Government Regulator, this is where we got it.
Right.
All of a sudden, this becomes...
And this is how we paid for it.
All of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, this is super important. Now, I've only given you it from the perspective of an image.
Right.
But now imagine being able to do that with a PDF, being able to do that with a doc file, being able to do that with an Excel spreadsheet, being able to do it with anything that's on your quote-unquote share. Now, you can basically index all of your information and selectively inject intelligence in the middle. I'll give you another example.
Mm-hmm.
The example that I gave, it was such a dumb story, but I thought it would be funny because this might have happened to somebody. Imagine a scenario where the database is gone, but you have, I generated 100,000 PDFs of invoices for quote unquote Tailwind traders
right.
over 10 years.
That's a lot of fabricated data, man.
Yeah, I know. And if you look at the, if you, most people didn't notice, but the people that were like statisticians would see, wait, why is your product purchases have a Gaussian distribution? That's weird. Yeah, well, because that's how I generated them.
Yes,
don't ask any questions. But basically, imagine if your database is gone. Could you rebuild your database from invoices that you generated from the database with PDFs?
Right.
Generally, the answer is no.
Well, if you kept all the paper, but now you're literally going through boxes and getting people to type all that stuff back in again. Like,
exactly. Horrible. And let's just say you were even smart and you kept like actual like machine-generated PDFs. Right. And so that's what I had.
Digital versions. But,
yeah, digital versions. So basically, there is this intelligence cognitive service called Form Recognizer, where you can tell it this. You give it like examples of your form, and you just need five of them, and it will extract key value pairs from it, including relationships. So if you have like an invoice that has like who you sold it to and where their address is, and then you had a table of all the items that they bought,
right,
it would basically return the key value pairs of name, address, who, what's in there, as well as here is the table and everything in it.
Wow.
And so basically my what my demo was is I showed how using Azure Cognitive Search, they added cognitive in there because of these skills, but Azure Cognitive Search, now I'm able to literally read the PDF, suck out the exact right information, put it back into a database.
Right. Yeah, and you're doing all the matching, the mapping almost automatically.
Yeah, it does it itself.
And you only had to feed it a few forms before it figured it out? Five.
Yeah, it's using what's called, it's using some clustering algorithms to figure out, you know, because if you think about it, when you clustering algorithms are interesting because they group things together.
Right.
And naturally, as humans, what we do is when we look at a form, if let's just say you're from the Middle East, you'll start from left, or you read from right to left, I think, from the Middle East. You basically start at the top left of the page, and then you start grouping things together. So if they're next to each other,
they're related.
You have an association in your brain. And so imagine a simple algorithm like K-means that groups all of these things together, or even hierarchical clustering, to where now it can figure out, oh, this label is close to this value. They must be related. Mm-hmm. So let's extract that as a key value pair. We'll take the label out. And because there's five of these, it's able to see like where it varies.
Right.
And it's really clever. And it's actually getting even smarter because you can actually train it. If it gets it wrong, you can actually like highlight some error. Look, you got this wrong. And it will get even better.
And it'll actually get better. And I got to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects called AllReady focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time using cloud and mobile technology. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Seth Juarez. And we're talking about making sense of the junk drawer of the average corporation or company that has, you know, that file share with all its stuff in it. And this form recognizer conversation is really cool because you were talking about, I read through five of the same form with this tool. It should be able to derive what's form and what's data because there's things that repeat on all five versions of it. And the things that change in all five versions of it. But I also thought, you know, I swear I've written code like this. Like you could write this by hand.
Absolutely.
To be able to parse a form. But this is a tool that'll help you.
Absolutely. And I learned a long time ago, this is an interesting digression, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, because I used to work for a company called DevExpress and they made software components.
Right.
And this guy was like at a booth. I was doing booth duty one day and dude came up. He's like, you know, I could write this myself. I'm like, yeah, I absolutely 1,000% agree. You definitely could. But once you write it, you own it and you'll have to support it forever.
Yes.
Is that what you want to do? And he's like,
is that how you want to live your life?
And he's like, no, can I get your card? I'm like, yeah, I know grids are not sexy, but you use them everywhere.
Yeah.
And so the answer to your question is you most certainly could.
Yeah.
But at the same time, should you? And is that where the value of your, are you giving the most value to your users?
Well, and it's interesting to think about, hey, we need to get all these forms parsed and I don't want to use a dev resource, right? That I can take someone who's a specialist in form handling, knows the value of the data and so forth, and got that domain expertise first and foremost, rather than be a developer and deal with this problem around these tools.
Absolutely. And then you also, if by the way, if you're using the cognitive search, you don't get just the byte, because there's a way, there's something called a knowledge store where you can redirect the output of these skills into some other storage location. But let's say you don't do that. You now have the benefit of a fully indexed document within.
Right.
As well, where you could like, just like, oh, let me go search the share. I mean, can you imagine being able to search the share and not just search for the file name, but what's in it?
Right. Yeah. And that it's this kind of form and I want this customer that filled in these forms and it'll give you just those PDFs. That's a heck of a search.
And imagine now that coupled with the receipt pictures too. Mm-hmm. Now you have two things.
Yeah.
And now let's get to the more, even more complicated data, like in a Word doc. What's in a Word doc? Well, there's text.
Yeah.
There's images and there's metadata in that file as well. So basically what Azure Cognitive Search does is it takes these documents, it cracks them open, and that sounds weird, but it basically cracks it into the text, the images, and the metadata, and then you can run skills over that. Hmm. So imagine someone embedded a receipt into a Word doc inside of a form inside of some other thing.
Right.
Now, because we crack the document open, you can run it even on these things inside of other things, which is bananas to me. Right, because now you're getting intelligence on what you actually have. And so if you pull, like, for example, let's say the receipt is in a Word doc and you're like, hey, you know, I did this thing and there's a lawsuit that happens later on and you're trying to find documentation about somebody. Well, that somebody might be in the search, in the text. The receipt might be in the in the same document, and you can pull that up automatically.
And show that relationship. If it's been Yeah, because I'd imagine someone writing a postmortem on an event or something. And yeah, they make a big Word doc with a bunch of important copy and a bunch of embedded images of the booth and stuff. And possibly the receipts, like all of those things could end up in there. And
people put it on the share.
Sure. Because what else would you do with it?
Yeah. And so that's where you get you're maximizing the value. Now, we've talked about certain kinds of document structure. We talk about what Azure Search does. But these skills, which are super interesting, you can also write your own.
Right. Well, I feel like if you're using the form recognizer, you are generating a skill there, right?
Yeah, it is a skill. It's classified as a skill. But basically what you're doing over all the documents is you're running what's called a skill set, which implies you can do multiple of them. And if you're like, wait, we know exactly how to do stuff, add more information. Because basically think of like your document going through a conveyor belt, right? Like and at every moment Azure Search is like stamping out information, squeezing the juice out of it.
Right.
And out comes a tree of things. The first tree that comes out is text, images, metadata.
Right.
And then as you're going along the conveyor belt, it's like, oh, let me be smart about the text. Let's do language detection. Right. And now you're adding more. You're adding a language to the thing. Okay. If it's a certain language, let's translate it to English too. So that's in the index too.
Right.
And so basically, as it's going by the conveyor belt, the tree of information on this unstructured
data
gets deeper and deeper. And if you're storing it in the actual index, becomes searchable.
Yeah. I can imagine doing sentiment analysis on that text as well. It's like, give me the critical, documents. Like, give me the angry ones.
You can do any smart thing that you can think of because ultimately this conveyor belt also includes the ability to write your own skill in the shape of an Azure function.
Okay.
So imagine you write an Azure function and you tell it, this is a part of the skill. This is one of the skill in the skill set. It will basically feed you whatever you ask it to feed you. You do stuff and you adorn the tree with more stuff as it goes out. And so now you can pretty much do anything.
Interesting.
And so if there's a special file format that only your company has,
right?
And as you're going over that index, you'd be like, oh, for this one, use this skill. Let's extract the text from that file format in our proprietary way. And then let's give it to the other skills, like extract sentiment, extract pictures, extract whatever. Then you're creating this hierarchy of steps that happen that the intelligence that's happening along the way adds to the tree of knowledge for that particular document, and now you can search and do whatever. And you can redirect the output of that to what's called a knowledge store, like table storage, for example.
Yeah, I can imagine like a homegrown CRM or project management tool or something where you've got a lot of useful data in there, but you at the minimum have to go to that product to get that data. But build this skill, and now I don't have to go into the product to get that data and probably get better search results anyway.
Yeah. I mean, no question. And like I said, because it's like you're making your own Bing or Google mm-hmm. for your own share, this can be completely private to you and your organization.
Right.
And you can manage the skills that went into it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're not wasting a lot of time with other stuff. I mean, and I appreciate the idea. It's like we all have a lot of office docs of various kinds that are probably valuable, but it's the other stuff beyond that that is also valuable. What about tying databases into this? That part of one of these semantic searches where I'm searching documents, maybe the stuff's actually in a database.
It could be, yeah. Because it turns out that you can hook these things up to like Cosmos DB too.
Right.
Or other databases and suck information out of there, which is super. Look, I myself, and I'm admitting far too many things to your listeners at this point in time, have a folder on my desktop called Desk.
Desk.
Yeah. And I even changed the icon of it to look like a drive so people think it's like important. No, it's where I move all my files off my desktop when I'm doing a presentation.
Right.
I know I can hide them all, but I just don't want to.
Right.
So everyone has that.
Yeah.
Everyone has that.
It's your junk drawer on your machine.
Yeah. Everyone has that. And so imagine that now for your whole company, your desk share, and now being able to extract insights, I think is a powerful thing.
Sure. And it's an interesting initiative to take inside of an organization. To be able to just start to see the value that data, to be able to find more from it. So we spend less time creating the thing over again, much less spend less time trying to find something. Because goodness knows, searching is agonizing. And often we do stuff like, okay, well, everybody has to put everything into SharePoint and we'll rely on SharePoint search to find everything. But people don't always put stuff into SharePoint.
And even SharePoint is not as incisive as cognitive search would be. In fact, I think they're working on a connector to point it just to SharePoint.
Right.
And imagine what that would unlock.
Yeah. To be able to use this cognitive search against SharePoint data. I was thinking like through a Salesforce plugin as well. Like that might be a fun thing to build to just be sure that when you're searching on something, it does pluck through the CRM.
But to be clear, I tested it on Azure Storage, mm-hmm. just blobs on Azure Storage, because that I figured that was the lowest common denominator of everything. And so if you put it there and point it, it happily just goes and does the thing.
Munges through.
Yeah, and it doesn't redo it. Like if it's seen something, it's like, I know you. And so as you drop documents in there and take them out, the indexer, it's just like I said, it's making your own Bing for your desk folder.
What about audio? You know, as a guy who makes a lot of audio.
That's a really good question. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, like if it were me, like let's just say you said, hey, I need to do audio.
Yep.
What I would do is I would put those, like let's say it's an MP3, into the share, I mm-hmm. guess. And let's just say it's blob storage. And as it comes in, right, we have speech to text.
Yeah.
You could basically bring that file in and add a skill to transcribe it.
Mm-hmm. Same with video too. Like take all the audio data and make it into caption data. So then it's indexable.
Yeah. And we have another service for that called Video Indexer that you can drop a thing in there.
Right.
And it basically creates transcripts. It tells you who's in there kind of thing.
So it does recognition.
Yeah. It does the recognition. It's pretty cool. I started looking at it for a project that I was going to work on. I probably should get back to it. You know, build took a lot of time.
Yeah.
For us to.
Every Microsoft person I've been talking to in the past week or so post build, they all have build hangovers. Like they're all recovering right now.
I'm taking a nap basically after this. One of many.
But I do see the, you know, you spend a couple of weeks getting ready for a huge online event, something you've never really done before, and people are exhausted. I mean, build's hard enough, much less, and we completely changed the format.
And it was 48 hours straight.
Yeah, which I hope you took some naps in that. You didn't weren't up for 48 hours.
No. I had the America's time slot on both days. And then we had Rick, who took the Australian time zone, which was about 5 to midnight.
Rick Kloss.
And then Christina Warren took the UK EMEA time slot from midnight to about 8:30.
So she did the overnights because she lives in Redmond too, right?
She lives over here. And so we basically showed up and we had to wear masks and everyone was socially distant. We did follow all the protocols. And we had our own rooms we had to sit in. And then when we came out, we had to be a certain number of feet apart. It was bananas, but it was awesome. that they were being so careful
with
us.
Because they found a way to do it, to be able to make the thing one way or the other. I think this is a different spin on a project that every organization has, which is to extract value from the data they have. And building a really great search tool so that it can actually dig deeply into all the data seems like a great foundation part to then getting into more analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, I'm pretty dogmatic about what machine learning is.
Right.
I'm happy to be proven wrong. I just think models are functions written in a different way. But imagine being able to extract data in such a way that if you use something called a knowledge store, now you have extra data that you're aggregating from your unstructured data, and then using that data to build models to do other things as well. You could certainly do that.
And is this knowledge store like a product?
So basically what it is when you're building this search index and you're basically putting together a bunch of things. You're saying, okay, so imagine you're building a search application.
Right.
You basically have a couple of things you need to worry about. The first is, where are you getting your data from? Like, point it to a storage. The second thing is, what is the shape of your index? And for those that are hearing me say index a lot, the way I think about it as a dev is it's a table to store data in that is really easy to search.
So nothing fancier than that, just a table.
Just a table. And you can describe the shape of that table however you like. Like the index that I did for the Tailwind Traders example was, it had multiple one-to-many relationships because every invoice had an invoice data.
Mm-hmm.
It had a customer part. It had an employee part. And then it had a table of stuff they bought, right? And so it had that structure. And so you build the index. And the last thing you have, so you have where it's coming from. You build the index, the shape of what you're searching for.
Mm-hmm.
You have the set of skills that you want to run it by. And then you have the indexer, the thing that actually does the work.
Right.
And so you define those four things, and then it just goes, right?
Cool.
So to answer your question, well, what is this knowledge store? Is it another product? No, it's just basically part of the skill set.
Right.
The skill set. One of the things you can add is, okay, any information that you glean from this, we want to put it in a different database other than the index. Can you do that for us? Because some of our customers were like, wow, the data we're getting out of the skill sets could be very useful on its own apart from an index. And so there's a way in the skill set to redirect the data that you're learning in that tree that gets stamped out and gets bigger as it goes to some other location. For
right.
my example, I put it into table storage inside of Azure storage account.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And it's the thing you're going to rely on as you start doing searches on this.
No, so that's a separate thing. Like and that's the beauty of this. So the searches actually happen in the index. That always is going to get stored.
Right.
But now you have the additional option of saying, well, I want it in the index, but I also want it somewhere else to do other things.
Right.
And so you redirect it to the knowledge store I don't remember where you can direct you, but I know for sure table storage, but there's a number of other places that it will take it to so that it would store this data in a relational form.
Right.
For you.
I just pulled up the doc and it says table store or blob storage or both.
There you go.
So that I could think then if what you're putting into the knowledge store then is somewhat now structured data, somewhat organized data.
Absolutely.
So now I could snap Power BI over top of this and start doing some analytics against it.
Exactly. And that's what I did in my demo.
Nice.
Yeah. And all that, you could be an input for machine learning, but basically it's a separate bucket to put the structured data that you glean from your unstructured data in a principled way. Because the search index's job is to help you find things. It's
right.
not to help you do Power BI. And customers were like, we love what we're doing with the skill sets and we're putting it into the index, but we'd love to have it somewhere else so we can do other things with it. And we're like, yeah, that's a great idea. And so that's what we did.
Nice. Wow, this is really fun, Seth. What I like about this is that you've certainly taken all the voodoo out of AI. I noticed that every time you develop something at Microsoft in this artificial intelligence space that does something useful, it gets a new name. So, yeah. you never said artificial intelligence such and such anywhere in this. It is cognitive services video indexing. It is the form recognizer. You're creating these specialized intelligences that leverage this technology, but you don't call it the voodoo thing anymore. It's a service. It's a service that recognizes forms.
Basically.
And that's all it is.
Yeah, because you have a choice. Like, you can either build these things or use these things. Just like the dude that told me he could build his own grid. Yeah, right. I think everyone out there can learn machine learning and figure out how to do form recognition.
Yeah.
It'll take a couple of years, and you'll have some software to build, and you'll have to maintain it.
Well, and a lifetime of maintenance. Yeah,
but if that's what you want to do, that's awesome. If you don't, we have people that do it here.
Yeah.
But I need to be careful here, because I need people to understand this. Mm-hmm. We do not use our customers' data to build our models.
No.
It's completely unethical. I'll give you an example, and I probably shouldn't share, but I will anyways. I got an email once from some of the text people, and they're like, our, let's just say, Turkish model is not doing so well at language recognition. And we have a lot of customers that are in Turkey.
Sure. And Turkish is a challenging language. Like, it's a complex, old school language, been around a long time.
So the person in charge, she said, well, let's go ahead and start paying some people in Turkey to generate more data for us.
Nice.
Because we do not use our customers' data to build these models.
Right. It's not ethical. Like,
it's not ethical. And it's probably illegal in some places. Yeah. I don't know. But we do not look at our customers' data for anything. And we have very stringent practices. In fact, every year we're trained on I think the scenario over the last 3 years has been some guy that used customers' data, and he was almost fired.
Right. Yeah, don't do it. Don't need to. You can make your own. There are better solutions to the problem. You'll save a whole lot of pain. Any place we should point folks for more information? I found your Ignite talk, actually. I'll include that in the show notes if folks want to watch this talk you did on Tailwind Traders from Ignite.
It's really goofy, so apologies in advance, because that's just my style. I try to inform and use humor to grease the wheels of understanding.
Yes.
That's how I do it.
I'm sure.
But
there's
a couple of things. Like, if you are interested in using AI, you mm-hmm. should look for cognitive services.
Yeah.
Very easy to do. It's literally an API call. You don't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
If you're interested in making AI, but you don't want to necessarily learn TensorFlow or PyTorch or whatever, we have some new power, the new citizen data science. There's something called, it's in the Power platform.
Right.
I think it's like Power AI or Power Builder or AI Builder. Yeah, you have something called AI Builder, and you'll probably look at that and make sure that I'm not lying.
I just learned about this
recently. And we also have something called Azure Machine Learning Service, and this designer that allows you to do drag and drop type stuff to build things. And so that's like the intermediate, you know. So there's like easy, just use it. Medium, use it, but you just drag and drop and do some stuff, and you build your model. We're starting to get to medium hard now. There's something called automated machine learning, mm-hmm. which will look at your data and just try a bunch of models in a smart way and build the model that it thinks is the best. And let me be clear about this. Automated machine learning isn't a for loop over all machine learning models we know about, because that would be stupid.
Right.
It's like the Netflix of machine learning. So, for example, like it will try 5, and then it'll be like, here's the output of this one. Mm-hmm. And then the AI underneath is like, well, if you like this model, you're really going to like this one. And then it tries it, right? So we're doing it intelligently. It's not a for loop overall. And then it will build the model that it thinks is best. You don't have to do anything. It's just you point at the data, say, I want to learn this column and use this data. And then it just runs. And you can tell it to run forever if you want. The longer, the better, because then I get better vacation pay kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Just kidding. That's not true.
But what I like about this is typically when you talk about machine learning initiatives or any of these things, we talk about the old school data guys, right? When we were building data warehouses, it was a year's worth of planning for several million dollars worth of expense.
Yes.
And then a year or two worth of execution before you started seeing any value. What I like about these cognitive services things is like, A, it's pennies per minute. And then if you're not happy, shut it off. And you should have some useful results in a few hours.
Yeah. And I've seen very large organizations leverage these very quickly without any hassle.
It's impressive. And it's just lowered the entry bar for experimenting this stuff. But I really like the way you've organized that. For me coming at it from a pure practical, I don't want to experiment. I just want stuff that works. cognitive services seems to have a bunch of stuff that will make my life better.
And we go by this 80-20 rule that we invented because, as Abraham Lincoln said, all the stuff you read on the internet is likely 95% inaccurate. I mean, it's a very famous quote from Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Yeah. But we have this 80-20 rule where we are convinced that 80% of your AI needs will be served by cognitive services.
Right.
The other 10%, you could probably get away with doing draggy-droppy type things and automated machine learning, which lives inside of Azure Machine Learning Service. And if you're in the 10% and you want to use your own machine learning stuff, like for example, one thing that I do not like is people say automated machine learning is like a data scientist in a box and you don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
I change it into automated machine learning is like saving 3 weeks of a data scientist's time.
Yeah.
So they can be like, oh, so it looks like automated machine learning thinks that tree-based models are the best. And so I will go on that route.
Yeah, save and some make time.
Save some time there. And so, and then obviously we have the full-blown enterprise, you get to work with other people, machine learning, data science thing.
Sure.
And the thing about machine learning nowadays is it feels a lot like, I'm going to say this and get in trouble, but it feels a lot like 1993 software development.
Wow.
Where you're like, where's the source code? Here, let me email it to you. Do you remember that? You remember that?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what data science is now because people are emailing models to each other.
I'm pretty sure you mailed me a 3.5-inch floppy, but okay.
Yeah, and so basically machine learning models are files. They're not – nothing else. Like there's
– no more
it's
a file. Than that.
And so basically people mail these things. But now imagine a process where you can version these things. Yeah. You can look at experiments, outputs. You can also know – for example, the other big challenge in data science is it works on my machine.
Right.
Again, 1993 problems.
Yes.
So how do you make that go away? Well, you use containers. And so in the back end,
yeah,
we containerize every experiment execution so that it can be repeated every time.
Well, and so it sounds like you also build up a body of work that shows some progress and stops us from repeating mistakes over and over again.
Correct. And then all the way to execution of the model at an end, because there's two phases, very definite phases of machine learning. There's you train it and then you use it. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be run in the same place.
But it also strikes me that this is the 1% case that if you haven't spent time with cognitive services, getting value and so forth, like you shouldn't be worrying about these higher end problem spaces. Because the odds are, A, you're going to get a ton of value and get a ton of results out of the stuff that's already built. And B, you haven't defined the problem well enough to know the 1% case you really want to do.
And that's – it's there are people that do that. But it's – again, it is fairly specialized.
Yeah. It does sound like a very specialized area. And I think it's one of the reasons that a lot of my listeners that I've talked to, they're hesitating on all of this because they don't see the need for the voodoo. Right. That they want to go down that complicated path yet, that we could probably get a lot more value out of the known sets of services that exist today before we even get into, okay, that turns out that, that combination of this is a very complicated and potentially difficult problem and something doesn't already exist for it as it is, but we know it'll have enough value from us to be worth to pour resources into.
Yeah. And like I said, I would just look at cognitive services and start from there. And Azure Cognitive Search, again, leverages cognitive services.
Absolutely. Seth, such a ton of fun to talk to you. I appreciate you taking the time to go through this. It's a really, it doesn't look like fun on the surface, but then most data things are like that, aren't they?
They sure are.
Until you are a data geek and you dig into it and go, holy man, this is really cool.
Well, thanks so much for having me, my friend.
Yeah, always a pleasure. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.